Hello, I'm Preston Schleinkofer. Welcome to Civil Defense Radio, where we discuss all things civil defense. Civil defense is about building community resiliency by becoming better informed, prepared, and organized to meet whatever disaster might affect you and your community. This current coronavirus crisis is a stark reminder of why it is important to be prepared. I suspect everyone is a bit more of a prepper now after this. Being a prepper isn't a bad thing. The media has done preparedness a disservice in America by portraying it as something of kooks and conspiracy theorists. This stereotype is no longer valid, especially now. This week's guests are preparedness experts and authors on the subject. They wrote the book on the subject called Emergency Plan Guide. Virginia Nichols and Joe Kruger will be with us in a minute, but first, I would also like to give a shout out to my editor, Brian Colbert at Sitch Radio. That's Sitch, S-I-T-C-H, Radio, for making our shows so great. Man, every week, I can't believe how good the show is because he cuts out all the mistakes that I make. If you are interested in starting a podcast and need help getting started, reach out to him at www.sitchradio.com. or click on the link in the show notes and it'll take you right to his website. He would be more than happy to help you. He is partly the reason why I'm here today. Please like, rate, and share this and other episodes of Civil Defense Radio as it helps us out a lot. We really appreciate it. As I said before the break, Virginia and Joe are with us this week to discuss their work in the preparedness of our families, neighborhoods, and communities. Let's welcome them to Civil Defense Radio. Virginia and Joe, welcome to the show.
Happy to be here.
Great. Can you guys just give us a brief bio on, you know, who you are, and then we'll get into how you got started in this?
Sure. Maybe I'll go first. I started off life as an engineer, decided that that wasn't a good career for me, and so I branched off and happened to be at the time where we were in the midst of the Cold War, so I got involved with Army intelligence, became an agent, and did some counterintelligence work and counterterrorism work throughout Europe. And since then, I've taken a lot of that experience, putting it into industry, and becoming a writer and a marketer, direct marketer, for over 30 years, and been very at that, mostly for large corporations.
I've done that educating, if you will, around the world. And during that time, I've also become a writer because educators want to share their information. I met Joe. Together, we have participated in many winning direct response campaigns. And as we talk about about our preparedness, that background really has meant a great deal to our success. And I'll let Joe talk about the one program that really launched it. Joe?
We got involved with a large utility, telecommunications firm, that was having some severe difficulties in competing in the new fiber optic world. And going over their problems, it connected with some of the experience I had in terms of educating some high-level military figures, a lot of colonels and generals and so on. And we took that experience and put it into an educational program for their clients. And now we're talking about clients that were accounting for revenue in excess of $300,000 or $400,000 a year to this telecommunications firm. The results of that campaign were aided by the war in Iraq and earthquake in San Francisco, all of which drove response to the campaign up over the 60% response level, accounting for hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue. That kind of launched us into this whole program of emergency response. We tried to apply that to smaller businesses. We've been pretty successful in many respects, but we also got involved in the CERT program and building a community response team. That seemed to us to be the real answer, is to get communities organized. And that has, over the last decade, allowed us to build one very successful team and actually spread our experience over, I guess it's worldwide now, isn't it, Virginia?
Yes.
Okay. People are looking to us for how we were successful, but we're just as important, just as interested in explaining to them where we were not successful. And that's what I hope to come across on your program today.
So I'll just jump in with, when Joe said we started a neighborhood group, this is a local neighborhood group in our community. These are the folks that live next door to us and across the street. It all started when we moved to this new neighborhood. Here are the reason we think we were able to be successful. First of all, we were used to talking about, we are used to talking with people that make decisions and who are leaders. So we found leaders within our own community. And after we had taken the CERT training, we lobbied them to take CERT training as well. Our marketing and sales background was essential to that lobbying effort, but it was successful. We got about 10% of our local community to take CERT training over a period of 2 or 3 to 5 years. It takes that much effort and that much time. During the time we were trying to get more neighbors individually trained, we, Joe and I, developed a framework for an organization in our neighborhood, and the framework is basically what CERT has, and actually, Preston, what you have devised or described in your own documents that I've read. So it's pretty basic stuff, but we find you have to have a structure and plug people in. And the last reason I think we were successful at getting more people to sign up, getting them engaged in a neighborhood organization, had to do with money. The CERT training from our city cost nothing. We have had tremendous support from local businesses in the way of donations and discounted programs, and our homeowners association also agreed to provide a budget to our emergency response group. We used much of that budget to buy equipment focused on communications, like handheld walkie-talkies and a ham radio station. So that's a kind of a short rundown of the components of why we think our group grew to be as large and successful as it was. I'll let Joe talk about what happened next.
Maybe you can summarize real quick, but I'd also like to know how you identified your leaders, because that's one of the things that the groups that I'm working with is having a hard time, is finding leaders and getting the message to the people that would be receptive to this idea. That's where the troubles or challenges have been. How do you convince these people that I assume that after this crisis, it's going to be a lot easier to do, but it still takes some type of convincing to bring them on board with being prepared and organizing in your local community, which, you know, when I found out that you guys were doing this program and your books, it just, you know, I said, man, I got to have these guys on the show. And so I'm glad you're here. And I'm looking to pull as much information from you guys as possible so that our listeners, as well as, you know, myself, can learn and use this information for the benefit of our neighborhoods and community.
Let me just say one thing first before I do the summary. Your experience that the resistance that you're facing is universal. It's human nature to procrastinate. It's also difficult for people to reach out. We found that our city's efforts to do this have flopped, and in fact driven people out of the CERT program because they didn't have the background or the support they needed. And this, we didn't need it because, first off, our website, theemergencyplanguide.org, attracts interest and gives us authority when we're talking to people. That's number one.
Yeah.
And number two, when I left the technical world as an engineer, I did something rather unusual. I went out and sold door to door just to get reconnected with humanity. I'd done that when I was in college, and I really enjoyed it, and most people do not. So I'm not at all afraid, and neither is Virginia, of walking up to a stranger, introducing ourselves, and basically engaging in a motivational conversation.
Okay.
But the real issue here is that we were able to identify people in the community just through social contacts. We found out who had military background, who had civil service background, first responders, people who had also held executive positions in industry. Those were natural born leaders, and we needed to get them through the CERT program and motivated behind it. First off, when we approach a new resident in the area, we don't do it alone. We do it in a group of three. I don't know why three is a magic number, but it is. And we wear our vests and we have our credentials. So we look authoritative, and we always start off by presenting material that helps them prepare. We don't try to recruit them immediately. We just try to engage them in the concept of being prepared and providing them with free information, pass along flyers, lists, anything that will help them overcome their procrastination. When we see someone that has more than normal interest, we try to drive them into the CERT program. We were able to get out of our community of about 350 homes, maybe 500 or so people, we were able to get over 40 people through the CERT program with this process.
Wow, that's
it didn't
good.
Happen immediately. It happened over a 2 and 3 year period. But those people became the core group of our leadership. Not everybody followed through. They always needed some guidance. And again, using our website and using our communication skills, we were able to provide them with the authority they needed to talk to people in their designated area. So we built the framework of a program, dividing up our neighborhood into six different divisions, and getting division leaders within those areas, recruiting people for them, and actually giving people titles. We then actually built a plan, which was a mistake in a sense, because we were too good at building plans for industry, and we found out we had to turn that into one-page documents.
Yeah, it's easier that way.
Keep it simple.
Yeah.
So that was our success. We had to have budget to do that. Those radios that we put in everybody's hands, they're only like a couple, maybe $15, $20 a piece, but that costs money.
Right.
And you
right.
have to have batteries, and batteries wear out. And a lot of the people aren't very good at changing the batteries or keeping them up. So we had to constantly replenish our supplies. So we needed input. The Homeowners Association was very good in this regard, mostly because we recruited people into our CERT program from their organization. It's called infiltration. But they actually came through with almost $2,000 a year. So that worked out pretty well. That gave us a little over $100 a month that we could invest in batteries and new radios and other equipment, additional vests for those people that hadn't been through the CERT program and so on.
Let me add right in here.
Yeah, jump in because you played a big part in this because of your personality. I'm too pushy.
It's important. Our community is a retirement community. So we have a built-in advantage on one hand in that people come here, they have the time to do extra things, and many of them really do have a feeling that they would like to give back. We've done many surveys. Why are you a part of this group? The main answer is, I want to give back to the community. So we were able to capitalize on that. The disadvantage of having seniors as the majority of your program is that they get old faster.
and
it's really true. By the time someone is reaching, 75 or 80 years old, their ability to participate becomes restricted.
Yes.
So we have to constantly add new folks, and it's become difficult. But even in the 50 to 20 years we've been active in this community, the world has changed. The
mm-hmm.
challenges are
yes.
different. We have people, who are speaking different languages now are our neighbors. They weren't here 20 years ago. We have more people who are working in different capacities than they were before. Building a community is harder today than it was, let's say, again, 20 years ago. But we have maintained our program. And I have to say, this last weekend, Preston, we felt, because of the coronavirus, that we needed to do something for our community. And within a few hours, we're able to create, design, and execute a telephone tree program that's now active, and we'll be getting the first reports on it tonight. It's only been in place for 3 days, and hundreds of people in our neighborhood are being called by their neighbors just to check in and see how they're getting along since we are all sheltering in place. So it's really gratifying, and people feel that they are giving back in a positive way.
Well, that's
now,
great.
We also have the advantage that all of our CERT people have radios. So we will have a monthly radio check tonight and be able to announce this program to a wider audience, whereas right now we've only got, I guess, about, a dozen people involved, Virginia?
On the calling?
Yes.
Oh, no, more than that. Twice that.
Twice that, okay. And this will expand as a result. But the communications have been very important to us. While we've always had pandemics on the list of catastrophes that we should be prepared for, it was never one that got much interest. But now we can't have the face-to-face contact that we have had with these other programs where we'd bring in experts to lecture on fire prevention, on earthquakes, and all sorts of things. We don't have that now. But everybody has a radio, and everybody's used to communicating with each other by radio, so that picking up the telephone and checking on each other is a natural extension of the CERT organization that we have.
No, that's good. Phone tree is great. From your military background, you probably were part of a phone tree at one point. It's a good way to keep in touch with people. One of the things that I've been promoting is the Map Your Neighborhood program that was developed in Washington State. And, they on the last page of their booklet is a something that you can put in your window, and it says, I'm okay, or I need help. And so, you know, at just by walking by, you can see that that sign in their window if you know, somebody needs help. You know, in this day and age, everybody's got a phone to some degree, but there are times when there may not be phones. So a physical sign in the window is good to have. And those radios are great to have as well, because they get out and everybody's on the same channel that's in the neighborhood. So somebody's going to hear you.
Yep. The we're very familiar with the Map Your Neighborhood program, and it does work, and it's been really put to use very effectively in the Bay Area of California, as well as up there in Washington. So we have used it and attempted to use it. We have our own other systems that we use to try to figure out who's doing well and who needs some assistance. We try different things all the time as new neighbors move in, to try to get them engaged. So it's an ongoing effort. I did want to say, we went through all that, Preston.
Uh-huh.
And after 15 years of doing it and working with our website, and we write a weekly advisory in which we talk about some aspect of preparedness one way or the other for business or for groups or for individuals, we finally felt we needed to share it via our books, and that's kind of where we are now, is documenting all of what we've done. And we have two series of books, trying to get it all in. The first one you already mentioned, we did our neighborhood books, which are, there's one for mobile home communities, one for apartment communities, one for single family residence communities, and one for small business. So that's a whole overview of how to create a program in your neighborhood. And now we're doing a second series, which would be more for getting started on a personal level, on a personal basis, with being prepared, pulling things together. And so that's been part of your, what you go with a lot of effort. You want to share it with people. That's been our effort, to share with people. It's been reasonably successful. People who've bought the books write in and say they like them,
uh-huh,
because they're written for ordinary people, and they're step by step, and they have charts and stuff. We have,
rather than trying to describe all of that right now, because we have, I mean, by time this coronavirus thing really heats up in another week or two, we will probably have something in excess of 30 books available for different circumstances. But what I'd like to do at this stage is tell you what I think is the secret to making this work. We've made lots of mistakes, and we've wasted a lot of time with what were good ideas, and we were going against human nature. Identifying the leaders in your area is absolutely key. And what we have begun to work with now is going after small businesses in the community. And here's the reason why we're doing it this way. The small businesses have a survival rate that's abominable.
Right.
Typically, less than half will ever reopen their doors after a major calamity.
Yes.
And
yes,
whether it's a cybersecurity attack, an earthquake, or whatever. But, and they do not build contingency plans for the same reason that the generals in charge of the military posts that I was in charge of didn't do it. They don't know the vocabulary. They don't feel secure. They don't know how to delegate and so on. So we have built a plan outline that guides them through and gives them confidence that they can delegate this to their staff. So we're pushing now to go after small businesses, get them to take the CERT training for their employees. And the key to this is the fact that those employees and that small business are already a team. Those people depend on each other for their livelihood, as opposed to being stray volunteers with all sorts of odd ideas about how to give back.
Right.
No, these people have, they have to survive. That business has to survive, or that income goes away. So what we're trying to do is get the small businesses to train their staff to take advantage of the free training that the cities and the FEMA offer, get their staff trained, and filter that training down to the families of those employees, bringing them into the team concept. That then puts leadership into the neighborhoods faster than going around door to door the way we've done it, trying to identify individuals. So you start, it's a cluster game.
Yes.
And,
yes.
You know, it seems to make sense because most of these businesses, small businesses, have people involved who have military training or who have had some sort of training in their first responder level. But the fact that the business is a team operation, these folks have leaders right there at hand. We noticed that a company down here in Southern California by the name of Toyota, you may have heard of them, they latched onto the CERT program in a big way. Now, they had a lot of advantages that, of course, small businesses don't have. Lots of money, big organization. We need to have a better penetration in terms of the number of the percentage of people involved. But we also have the advantage of talking through the leadership of those small businesses. So what we really are trying to recommend to you now is to give some thought to going after the organizations in your neighborhoods or in your areas where there are small businesses that respond to the need for a contingency planning process.
Yes.
That makes sense?
Yes. Yes, it does. I've thought about that also, but I really hadn't thought about how to go about doing it, but you guys have a book on that, I noticed.
Yes, we do. And yeah. We not only do we have a book, we're in the process right now of developing an entire course for it. I mean, there are lots of very qualified contingency plan consultants out there in the world. The problem is their income is mostly from large corporations. They're very well versed on all sorts of bureaucratic requirements for, you know, reporting and so on. The small business people are really intimidated by the cost of bringing in one of those expensive consultants.
Right.
We're saying, do your planning, at least get a draft plan together, piece by piece, department by department, whatever it takes. Then, while it's in draft form, bring in one of those consultants to bless it, to tell you what else you need to do at a fraction of the cost of having to educate them on your own business.
Well, you know, we're getting pretty close to the end of our time here, but you may not have to bring in a high-paid consultant to bless it. Emergency managers of your community are well trained, and they can take a look at your plan and help you with that. And if there was a civil defense organization in your community, that organization would have experience also, and they could offer some type of evaluation to your plan. So there's multiple aspects to this. So in like next 30 seconds, can you give us any last minute advice you wish to tell the listeners, or maybe your website and how they can get a hold of you guys?
The website is the best way because we update that every week. Virginia is just doggedly getting those advisories in. And we've got 10 years of history behind that site. The emergency managers, we're on our third one in the last 5 years. that it's a political issue in the cities, and I wish it were more reliable. And you're absolutely right. These are the people who could bring a lot to the party. But anyway, the emergencyplanguide.org, everything we're doing is available through there. There's an awful lot of free information, documents you can download. We're sharing anything and everything we know. And, you know, the idea is you can't do it alone.
Yes.
Virginia, you got anything to add?
No, I think you've done it.
All right.
Well, thanks for having us on, and thanks for doing what you're doing, because we really need a lot more people doing this, and I think it's just a matter of making it easier for them.
Yes, I think you're right. And civil defense equals resiliency equals survival. The top-down governmental approach to solve our community resiliency problem has failed us. We need a community-based grassroots approach to solve this problem. To be resilient, it takes preparation, organization, and training to meet the needs of whatever situation we may find ourselves in, like this coronavirus. Civil defense helps reduce panic in a disaster, and this is why we strongly recommend establishing a community-based grassroots civil defense organization in your city or county in partnership with your local emergency manager and community leaders. Let's start a conversation with the guide found on our resources page at civildefenseradio.com. There's also a threats tab there that will help you understand better why we are doing what we're doing. Be sure to check out our regular postings on Facebook at Civil Defense Radio and on Twitter at civil_def_radio, where we post information about the many threats we see to our safety and security as a nation. I wish to thank Virginia and Joe again for being on the show, and thank you, our friends and listeners, who are with us regularly. I really appreciate you being with us this week. So please, be safe, be informed, be prepared, and may God bless you and keep you until next time.